Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Resist much and obey little. That's my message to our precious Blood River Radio family. I repeat that, resist much and obey little, and I reference that especially to the damn draft. They're talking about cranking up the draft here in the United States, sending American empty-headed 18, 19, 20, 22-year-old boys to fight and die in Israel, sending them to Israel. And that can never float. Got this quick. I'm in Memphis, Tennessee. Get this quick news media before we go pick up the bitter ender. This is just in. Palestinian protesters have shut down one side of the bridge going to Arkansas. They're called the Hernando Soto Bridge. It's the newest bridge across the Mississippi here in Memphis, Tennessee, and that is huge. I'm glad to see that. I hope they do. I'm glad they're making noise. Anyway, folks, we transitioned to the third hour now. We're picking up the bitter ender himself, none other than Gene Andrews, the bitter ender. He just in with a fresh batch of swords. I hope this truckload of swords will at least last him at least 6 weeks. My God, we're going broke with these damn swords, man. Bitter ender, you got to take it easy on us, man.
No. I am going to take it easy. I'm going to, as a Southern gentleman, I'm going to turn this first part of the program of this hour over to our two beautiful ladies, Nancy Hitt from Kentucky, who is the bluegrass buzzsaw when she gets started, and to Monica Schaefer from British Columbia. And so I'll salute her with O Canada. Well, I won't sing it. That probably get a war started between Canada and the United States if I tried to sing O Canada with my voice. So I would turn it over to the ladies. They wanted to finish up something from the previous hour. So ladies,
okay.
Take it.
Okay. Thank you. It's just, you know, because we are in German History Month, we just give a little bit of German history at the beginning of this third hour, and then I'm going to sign out and let you two take the rest of it, because I know you have some very interesting things to talk about. So there are the two Hesses, but it's one is a Hess and one is a Hess, and both of them have a first name of Rudolf in terms of German history here. World War II, we're talking. So there's Rudolf Hess, H-E-S-S. He is a very, very brave man who was Adolf Hitler's right-hand man, you could say, and he is the one who made that very, very heroic attempt at a peace mission, parachuted into Scotland, but was betrayed and caught and spent the rest of his life behind bars, much of it in solitary confinement. And that's a whole other story. The other Hess, it's pronounced Hess because it's H-O with two dots on the O. That's an H-O umlaut, S-S. Another Rudolf, but he was the commandant of the Auschwitz work camp, internment camp, for most of the period of time of World War II, I believe. And so his name is very well known by ordinary people, and they will always, you know, ordinary folks who haven't yet opened their eyes or really looked into it, they'll say, oh, but, you know, he confessed about all those millions of Jews that he personally put in the gas chambers. And
I thought it was trillions.
Yeah. Let me just point out that he was tortured to the point of insanity during those Nuremberg military tribunals, and that was during 1946. They extracted his confession, so-called confession, by the most heinous torture ever, and he was basically a zombie who said all kinds of things that were completely impossible and insane after the torture of him, and also he had a large family. I believe they probably made some threats against the family as well. I'm not sure about that, but anyway, that's just what I wanted to bring into this segment about German history, and about Hess and Hess, the two Rudolfs.
You know, Monica, I read the book that was written by Rudolf Hess's, his nurse while he was in Spandau. And it is heartbreaking. Of course, you know, the probably an American black along with the British killed him before he was being able to be released. His doctor was a Tunisian who was brave enough to write this book. And Hess, who had been raised in Alexandria in Egypt, even though the military would not allow Hess to be spoken to at all, he was able to secretly communicate with his Tunisian doctor because he spoke Arabic. And if you've got a minute, I am in this book about Hitler from 1934 and 38. I'm going to read what was said about Rudolf Hess in 1934 and 1938. But the life of Hess was horrible because he spent 50 or 60 years in Spandau, mainly by himself. All of the other prisoners had been released before he died, before he spent probably the last 10 years, the only prisoner. And they would only refer to him as number 7. I mean, how brutal and inhuman is there? I mean, there's just no, you just have to read the book and understand the immense torture this man went through to stand up for National Socialism. Rudolf Hess was born in 1894 in Alexandria, and he was the son of a German family living abroad. At the age of 14, he was sent to Germany in a technical school. And at a later date, he entered upon a business career. At the outbreak of war, talking about World War I, he enlisted in one of the corps of volunteers and served on the Western Front. In 1916, he was wounded before Verdun. He was afterwards sent to Romania, and in 1917 became a leader of shock troops in the Carpathians. Here he was wounded again on two separate occasions. From August of 1918 to the end of the war, he served as an airman on the Western Front. On the occasion of the deliverance of Munich from the communist regime, he saw service with one of the corps of volunteers and was wounded once again. This is a man, this is just all around the time of the First World War. As one of the first adherents of Hitler, he joined in the struggle of the SA and was severely wounded at the battle in the Hofbräuhaus. He marched with Hitler on March the 9th of 1923, and with him was sent to the fortress of Landsberg. Here he became Hitler's confidential secretary and later his personal representative, in which capacity he has continued up to the present time. Actually, I think Rudolf Hess was actually the one who transcribed Mein Kampf. So that's about what I know about Rudolf Hess. But
yeah,
Hess had a terrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll just add one final thing, and you did mention it about his death, that he was murdered. You know, they tried to say to the world that he committed suicide in prison by hanging. Now, this was an old man by then. I think it was in 1989, correct me if I'm wrong. And they were supposed to release him. Sorry, did you say yes, 1989?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so they were supposed to release him. This is after the Iron Curtain dropped, right? And he was supposed to be released. I guess they did not want this old man to be released to the world to tell his side of the story. And, it's that they killed him. I mean, there was no way on earth that he could have hung himself because he was a very fragile old man by then.
In fact, this Tunisian doctor, he was present right after the so-called hanging. And he knew that there had been a delay in allowing him to get in to see his patient, Rudolf Hess. So he was pretty aware, and I'll have to give him credit. It took a lot of courage for him to write this book and to expose the British and the Americans who had killed this man. And the only reason he had stayed in there as long as he had is because the Soviets had wanted him to stay forever. And when the Soviets, decided, I guess with the, I'm not sure when it was, right before he was killed, the Soviets had decided that he could be released. And so instead of being released so he could tell the truth, the Americans and the British killed him.
Yeah. So there you have it. The man who tried to get peace between Germany and the Allies.
Yes.
He was deemed so dangerous that they kept him locked up. And then as an old man, they murdered him so that he could not be released to the world. It is... Mm.
What's the name of that book, Nancy?
Well, I'll have to look it up. He was called Number 7. I forgot the book. I did a book review on him, but it's heartbreaking.
We'll get that title of that book as soon as we come back from this break. Be right back, folks.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, it is so wonderful to be back here. We picked up the old bitter ender himself, and listen, I guess we're going to go to the old bluegrass buzzsaw bell cow. Go ahead, bell cow buzzsaw. And here we go. We've got to crank up a chainsaw here, man. But anyway, go ahead, Nancy. Hey, we'll get you a chainsaw with a bell on it for Christmas. Anyway, go ahead, buzzsaw.
Okay. Well, back in the day when I was trying to learn what happened to the so-called Civil War, I joined the Louisville Civil War Roundtable. They had monthly meetings and monthly speakers. And one of the speakers was Peggy Shepherd from Andersonville, Georgia. And she had written a book, and I'm looking at it right now. She had signed it, Best Wishes from the Author, Peggy Shepherd, October the 30th of 1995. So I'm assuming that that was the date of the speaking event that she attended in Louisville at the Civil War Roundtable, and I would have bought her book titled Andersonville, Georgia, USA. Now, oddly enough, I want to tell you a little something about Peggy, and I became friends later on. I was able to go to Andersonville several times. She was a great encouragement to me because I wanted and successfully found the gravesite of Henry Wirz, who was executed at Andersonville, because of Andersonville. I found his Kentucky wife, and his wife had been unmarked in Kentucky, and I was able to have Henry Wirz's wife marked in Kentucky. And Peggy Shepherd gave me quite a bit of encouragement. I was able to go to Andersonville a couple of times for the memorial that they have down there to the monument. But it's interesting, Peggy Shepherd was a Yankee. Peggy Shepherd was born in Yonkers, New York. She spent her summers in a place in Cape Cod where she met Fred Shepherd of Americus, Georgia, in 1945. She came back with him to Sumter County in 1946 as his bride. Now, she was quite a sharp lady, and in spite of the fact that she was born in New York, she was very sympathetic to the South and took great interest in Andersonville. Eventually, they moved to the little village of Andersonville, which is across the street from the actual fort that had been the infamous fort at Andersonville that was overseen by Captain Henry Wirz, who was a native of Switzerland. And I'm going to read just a short introduction about how, from her book about Andersonville, and then Gene, I think he wants to talk about some of the things that happened with Henry Wirz. The tale of Andersonville has been told many times. Surviving prisoners left memoirs, letters, diaries, books about their experience. Reams of official testimony built up during the United States military trial of Captain Henry Wirz, the keeper of the prison, for alleged brutalities to Union soldiers confined there. The trial, conviction, and execution of Captain Wirz set off a nationwide wave of public feeling and controversy. One has to understand that this prison that was actually built by local labor was at the end of a railroad track in a very isolated area in Georgia. And it was originally built to maintain at the most 6,000 prisoners. It went to the total at one point of 33,000 Union prisoners. And as the first Union soldiers arrived in February the 25th of 1864, they found no housing, no sanitary facilities, but simply this huge corral in which they were penned. Haphazardly, they built shebangs, which were made out of any kind of material they could find. The drinking water was from a creek which was contaminated, and these things happened because of the mass number of prisoners that were sent down there so quickly. In fact, the stockade was about 26 square acres to begin with. I think it expanded later on. The problem was that the South in 1864 was desolated. They had a hard time feeding 6,000, much less 33,000. The graves, ultimately about 12,000, almost 13,000 people died. Many of the guards died. So they could not say that everybody was mistreated or not fed properly. Even the guards were starving. There is a theory that there was some kind of parasite that also was in the ground that affected many of these people. But there is no doubt that the South was unable to actually take care of these people in this prison. But unfortunately, even though Henry Wirz was a medical doctor, had been wounded severely in the right arm, that was the reason that he was made the commander of this prison, because he was really not able to fight any longer. There is no way that he was mistreating people. In fact, he couldn't mistreat people. His right arm was always had given him trouble since he was wounded in the right arm. At any rate, I think Gene wanted to know what happened after. Of course, what happened is Henry Wirz was convicted by the military and executed November the 10th of 1865. They actually put his skull on display for money, the Yankees did. And his lawyer, who was actually Swiss, they would not allow him to have a Christian burial. They would not allow his wife in Kentucky to receive his body. His body was used to make money in the old capital. Finally, his Swiss lawyer convinced them to allow his bones to be buried at Mount Olivet. But the Swiss lawyer, Shade, I think his name was, he never believed that all of the bones were actually returned, or that they were actually ever sent to the cemetery. Finally, in many years later, in 1956, someone who was a sympathizer named Thomas Spencer, is an Atlanta writer. He was the one who put up a marker at Mount Olivet for Henry Wirz, because his burial site was unmarked until 1956. There's a lot more to the story, of course, and one of the things that happened is Clara Barton came down after the war and was able to identify many of these thousands and thousands of Union dead, because they had kept a meticulous record of these people. Now, that is not the kind of treatment our Confederate soldiers received in Northern prisons. In Northern prisons, it would be difficult for anybody to find out who died in Northern prisons. They just threw them out into a ditch or something. But this was meticulously kept, the names of all of as many as they could keep. There were only a few. There were 500 stones where there was only one word written on the stone. It said unknown. That in itself proves that these people were not just used as, that there was inhuman treatment. It was impossible to feed them. There was just no way. Maybe, Gene, you can tell about how the raiders acted. And another thing I think is quite interesting, there was Lincoln would not allow an exchange, and there were even allowed some of these prisoners who were in bad shape to go and beg for an exchange in Washington, and they still refused an exchange. Damn. So that also added to the death toll.
That's pure.
Anyway, what I want to talk about later is a little history of how I found Henry Wirz's Kentucky wife. Okay, Gene.
Okay, that was a good overview of that, and I think you hit one point we need to definitely reemphasize. Why the reason they moved the prisoner of war camp down there? They had so many Yankee prisoners around Richmond in areas around there. They were having to take too many soldiers away from Lee's army in Northern Virginia to guard the prisoners. And so they built two or three prisoner of war camps. There was one in Southern Alabama, or in Alabama, I think Catawba, one at Andersonville, which is actually named Camp Sumter, was the real name of it. And like you said, from February of 64 through April of 65, and there's some estimates that they had about 32,000 there at one time, but over 45,000 actually passed through there. And the point you made was well made, and we need to reemphasize, Lincoln stopped the prisoner exchange. Up until 64, we had 500 prisoners. They had 500 prisoners. We'll say, okay, we'll swap. And they even had a scale worked out, so many privates for a captain, so many, you know, all that sort of thing. But Lincoln stopped that because the Yankees, once they were exchanged, would go home in the North and they wouldn't fight again. They wouldn't sign up for the Army. The Southerners, when they were exchanged, they'd go back into the Army. So that was the reason why he stopped that.
Well, I guess we hear the music there, folks. We're getting ready to take a quick break. We'll go back to the bitter inner himself as soon as we come back. Hang on, folks.
Across the land, you're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News. I'm Laura Winters. The Pentagon finally launching strikes in Iraq and Syria after Iran-backed proxy groups killed three members of the U.S. military last week. At least 85 targets hit. B-1 bombers flown from here in the U.S. to the Middle East to carry out the strikes. The bodies of the three sergeants, two women ages 23 and 24, and one man who was 46, flown back to Dover Air Force Base Friday in Delaware. President Biden, First Lady Jill, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on hand for the somber ceremony. In other news, New York City launching a $50 million program to hand out prepaid credit cards to illegal aliens. Administrators from Democrat Mayor Eric Adams' office will begin handing out the prepaid credit cards to families being housed in New York City hotels. The Immediate Response Card Initiative appears to be similar to the state's food stamp program called SNAP, which provides lower-income New Yorkers with a credit card to cover the cost of food. This freebie comes as New York City police say the latest crime wave is illegal aliens who have formed pickpocketing teams who are stealing wallets, purses, and cell phones from unsuspecting patrons at restaurants and bars in Manhattan. At least four of the illegal alien men involved in assaulting two police officers last weekend in Times Square, kicking them in the head, were arrested and set free on no bail, and they have reportedly boarded a bus to California. New York Governor Democrat Kathy Hochul asked about the crime. She tells reporters these men should be deported. Carl Weathers, best known for playing Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies, has died. He was 76 years old. He was born in New Orleans and had a 50-year career in movies and TV. He first appeared in the iconic role of Apollo Creed in Rocky back in 1976. This is USA News.
Attention timeshare owners. Tired of the financial stress? Were you misled by the salesperson? Don't or can't use your timeshare anymore? If any of these apply to you, then you may qualify for timeshare cancellation and get the relief you need now. Timeshare Defense Attorneys is the number one affordable fixed-fee legal solution in the country, with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. That's certainly better than my grades. They even offer a 100% client satisfaction guarantee. Let one of their experienced lawyers evaluate your case and explain the process. If they take you as a client, they'll work on your case until it's resolved in your favor, guaranteed. Expect great service and a close working relationship with your lawyer, keeping you informed every step of the way, protecting your rights, interests, and even your credit. It's that simple. Even a kid like me can understand it. The consultation is free. Call today.
800-875-1853. 800-875-1853. That's 800-875-1853.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Jesus,
Dear Blood River Radio, precious family, I'll just reiterate, do not let yourself get drafted. If the United States government starts their draft, like I'm hearing talk of it, and but they said they want to put boots on the ground in Israel, tell them to go to hell. Do what, resist. If you have to, go to jail. It's better to go to jail and get your legs blown off over there fighting for another G war. Anyway, we're going to go right back to the bitter ender himself. He has some really, it's not news, but it's history. It will infuriate you if you're anything like me. So go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, we were talking about why the conditions were so bad at the Andersonville prison, and that's all you ever hear. It's Andersonville. Oh, the Confederates are so terrible. They did this. They starved us. They starved us. The whole South was starving. Lincoln's total war against the South was not just against the army, but against the food supply, against the civilian population. They destroyed farms. They destroyed grist mills. They destroyed private homes. They destroyed their transportation system. They couldn't ship food to Andersonville. The Confederate army was starving. The South was blockaded. We couldn't get food in from other countries or medical supplies. They slaughtered the livestock and just left the carcasses. When the federal army would move through an area, they'd take whatever livestock they could to eat, and what they couldn't haul off, they just slaughtered it. And there were carcasses of mules and horses and cattle and hogs laying all over the countryside in the South where they'd gone through. And so the South couldn't feed itself, couldn't feed its army, and they couldn't feed the prisoners. They had these photographs, and I'm sure you all have seen them in these books, of the prisoners when they were released from Andersonville, and they looked like skeletons with just skin on them. They never took photographs of the guards, because the guards at Andersonville had the same rations as the prisoners. There were 129 guards that died of disease and starvation at Andersonville. They're buried in a cemetery close to the town of Andersonville there. So 129 of the guards died that they went through that. So what we got then was a government run by war criminals in the North. They could care less about the Union soldiers, what happened to them. They wanted to stir up hatred and animosity and vengeance against the South for starting this evil war and questioning whether the state could leave this glorious, glorious Union that they had forced upon us. And I always like to remind people, we do not want to be a part of the United States. We in the South are a part of the United States because we were forced at gunpoint to join the United States. We voted, which is supposed to be the American way. Every vote counts. Consent of the governed, where did that go to? We voted to be a part of the Confederate States of America. We are a part of the United States because our country was invaded. Over 280,000 of our young men were killed defending our country. Probably another 10,000 civilians were murdered. And I'm not talking about collateral damage that an artillery shell fell short and hit a house and killed the civilians. No, they were actually taken out in their yards and shot down and murdered. So this was the tyrannical, evil government that we were fighting against. And you talk about Saint Abraham the Pious. That is a myth that is absolute garbage. And his whole cabinet and government in Washington were war criminals. You talk about Edwin M. Stanton, the Secretary of War, and his attitude toward Northern people. If someone came to Washington and complained about the war, that it was going on too long, it was costing too much money, it was costing too many lives, he would point a finger right in their face and say, I have the power to send you to a place where all I have to do is ring that bell, and I can send you to a place where you will never hear the dogs bark again. And this was the government that we inherited from the Lincoln administration. And this is why it's so stupid, I think, for these so-called conservative Republicans that are only conservative when they're running for election. And as soon as they get elected, they turn into rhinos and liberals. But anyway, these so-called conservative Republicans to be bragging about the party of Lincoln, and we have the Lincoln Day luncheon and this and that, and they get on TV and they have a bust of Lincoln in the background. And I thought, you stupid idiots, you don't know what in the world you're talking about, because this was a dictatorship. And all the things that these conservative Republicans are yapping and whining about senile Joe Biden and the evil government that we have in Washington, and we just, you know, put the Republicans in there and we'll take care of it. All of this garbage that we have for a government in Washington right now, where did it come from? It came from the Lincoln administration. And why they want to fall down and worship Lincoln and portray him as this great martyr, this saint, this something that came down from Mount Olympus and blessed all of us mere mortals out of here scrubbing and grumbling around in the garbage pile, it makes no sense. First of all, they don't know anything about history. And they just supposed to worship Lincoln. They think they're supposed to worship Lincoln when they know absolutely nothing about factual history. So anyway, Lincoln stopped the prisoner exchange. He would not even send food and medicine to the prisoners at Andersonville. The Confederates admitted, we can't feed ourselves. We're starving. You've cut off our food supplies. You've cut off our transportation. We can't get food down here. You have captured Jacksonville, Florida. That was the closest major city. You've captured Jacksonville, Florida. Why don't you send food and medicine to your soldiers in our prison, and you send the sanitary commission with it, which is the forerunner of the Red Cross. Send the sanitary commission with it to make sure that we don't take any of the food or medicine, that it goes, every bit of it goes to your prisoners of war at Andersonville. Lincoln wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't do it because he wanted the South to have to use what meager supplies they had to feed the federal prisoners. So every biscuit or piece of rotten meat or whatever that went to the prisoners, that didn't go to a Southern soldier or a Southern civilian. So when the war was over and they released these prisoners that were there, the Yankee Nation was in shock. They didn't know how bad it was. And the Confederate authorities had been trying to tell them, we can't feed them. We can't feed ourselves. The reason then that they made such a big deal out of Andersonville, the prisoners were released in April of 1865. What other big event happened in April of 1865? Lincoln, the dictator, was executed for war crimes that he had committed against the South. So you had Lincoln's execution... Lincoln's execution for war crimes, and you had the release of these prisoners from Andersonville all at the same time. And that hit the front pages like a gigantic atomic explosion off. And so they had to have some kind of villain. Somebody had to be responsible for this. And so they got Booth and his fellow compatriots, and then they had this horrible, terrible, evil commandant of this prisoner of war camp, Major Henry Wirz. And so they drug him off up to Washington and had one of these show trials that drug on and on forever. They had witnesses that weren't even at Andersonville that testified. And it was all designed to whip up this hatred against the South and vengeance for the execution of the war criminal Lincoln. And that was one of the reasons why Mr. Booth executed him, because Lincoln was responsible for the horrible prisoner of war camps that were in the South, like Point Lookout, Camp Douglas in Chicago, Johnson's Island near Lake Erie, and some of these other ones. And, Elmira, New York, that the Southerners referred to as Hellmira, New York. They wouldn't even give the Confederate prisoners in Elmira, New York, winter coats during the winter. So many of them froze to death. And their excuse was, well, if we gave them civilians in New York, I will give them credit for this. They even offered to turn over winter coats to the prisoners. And the Lincoln administration and the U.S. military would not allow the civilians in New York to give winter coats to these Southern prisoners, because they said, well, if they have winter coats, they could escape and they'll look like civilians. So they let them die. And I've been to that cemetery in Elmira. It's a huge cemetery where all the Confederate prisoners are buried. I've been to the one in Indianapolis at Camp Morton there, and even went out to Johnson's Island in north there of Ohio. So they had death camps all over the North, And they could feed the prisoners. They had the medicine. They had the food. They had the clothes. They wouldn't do it. They let them die. Mm. And the guards Douglas in Chicago would amuse themselves by taking the prisoners out barefoot in the wintertime and make them stand in snow. And then they'd go inside the guardhouse where it was warm and watch them. And if they came back out and they saw that their footprints had moved, then they'd make them strip down and sit in the snow and ice.
God
nice
almighty.
People. Nice, really nice people.
Sound like one of Eisenhower's death camps.
Yep.
People will re-bite back, and I know this is a horrible step, but you need to, by God, hear it to know what this Yankee government was and what it still is. Be right back, folks.
Treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you mysticism. Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going right back to the bitter ender. He is absolutely on fire. I'm telling you, it's got me on fire. God almighty, how I hate the government in Washington, D.C. Back to you. Back to you, Bitter Ender.
Well, we're going to just take a minute here, and I'm sure Dancy has some more information on the Wirtz family. But when Major Wirtz was taken to Washington, D.C., they put on this Soviet show trial where you have a result of the trial, a conviction, of course. There's always a conviction in these things. And then they put on a trial to make it look like there's some kind of civility going on. And, of course, he was convicted in the false testimony and people that weren't even there. So he was convicted, sentenced to be hung at the old Capitol prison in Washington on November the 10th, 1865. Now, the Yankees were in a quandary. They also had another prisoner, former president of the Confederate States of America, Jefferson Davis, in Fortress Monroe. And they wanted to hang him for treason. But the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court told them, you really don't want to put Jefferson Davis on trial because you can't prove that secession was illegal by the Constitution. So now they're scratching their nasty heads and fleas are running out in every direction. But they were trying to figure out how are we going to hang Jefferson Davis. So they went to Major Wirtz on November the 9th, the night before he was to be executed on November the 10th, and said, listen, if you will confess that Jefferson Davis ordered you to mistreat the prisoners at Andersonville prisoner of war camp, that it was all Jefferson Davis's idea to starve them, to mistreat them, to, you know, there were some that were hanged, down there. But the other prisoners asked him to get rid of these six guys, the raiders, that were going around and stealing from the other prisoners and taking what little food they had. So they came to Major Wirtz and said, these people are killing our own people. And he said, all right, you have a trial. You figure out who they are, and we'll take care of whatever results you have. So they had these six of them. They asked Major Wirtz to execute them, and he did, because they had asked to get rid of these other prisoners. So anyway, the whole thing was, tell the tribunal here that Jefferson Davis ordered you to have these prisoners executed and to mistreat and misfeed all these prisoners there, and you can go free. And Major Wirtz's answer was, then I'm a dead man. He wouldn't save his life by implicating Jefferson Davis. And that's the type of government and the dishonest, illegal, low, dirty policies that were enacted by the federal government. Well, it's the same thing that happened to Sam Davis, boy hero of the Confederacy. He was captured by the Yankees down there by Pulaski, Tennessee. They accused him of being a spy, even though he's in a Confederate uniform. And they were going to hang him. And they said, well, if you will tell us who your commanding officer is in Coleman Scouts, we'll release you. And he was standing on the gallows with a rope around his neck, and he said, if I had 1,000 lives, I would give them all before I betray my country or the confidence of a friend. And so this was the type of character that many of the Southern soldiers and leaders, officers, exemplified. And that's why this had to be wiped out. They could not allow people like that to be allowed back in the glorious Union. They also murdered another Confederate prisoner of war after the war was over, Champ Ferguson, up on the plateau and on the border between Tennessee and Kentucky. And that was a rough part up in there. It was one county was pro-Confederate, one county was pro-Union. It was neighbor against neighbor. People were settling old feuds from before the war, and it was a lot of guerrilla warfare. He surrendered when they told everybody, well, Lee and Joe Johnston have surrendered, and even Forrest has surrendered, and you surrender and you follow the rules of the United States and you'll be a citizen again. So, believing that they were telling the truth, he surrendered, and then they trumped up charges against him and hung him after the war. So the Lincoln government, or what later became, you know, the U.S. government after the Lincoln was executed for war crimes, they lied to so many of these people to get them to surrender, and then turned around and had them murdered. And it was just like what y'all were talking about Albert Speer, and they murdered him so he couldn't tell the truth about what happened during World War II and how many times the Germans had attempted to get a peace settlement with the British or with the Allies, and it was turned down because Churchill did not want Germany as an economic rival to England, and he was willing to provoke a war that would cost millions of lives just because he didn't want England to have any competition in the world economic markets. And that's all of this goes back in the United States anyway. It goes back to the Lincoln administration and how uncivilized their warfare was and how many lies and misinformation and propaganda were used to vilify the South in our attempt to gain our independence. As President Jefferson Davis said, we seek no conquest nor aggrandizement. All we ask is that we be left alone, and that the North, the Yankee Empire, could not allow that to happen. So I'm going to turn it back over to Nancy and let her tell you about all the research that she's done in finding these relatives of Major Wirtz.
And they'll never leave us alone. They haven't left us alone to this day, have they, Sister Nancy?
It's been continuous reconstruction. Continuous.
They'll never stop until we could get rid of this government one way or the other. By this government, the one saw on the Potomac.
I never had any faith that if Lincoln had survived, that there would have been a better settlement in the South. I don't believe that, because Lincoln knew about the burning of the South under Sherman. But in 2006, I wanted to find the grave of the Kentucky wife of Henry Wirtz. We knew that he had married a Kentucky woman. But nobody seemed to know where she was buried. I did find her grave. I had it marked, and we had a big event in 2006. But I want to read a little bit about how this happened from a magazine that I used to write for, The Lost Cause. In fact, Eddie and Gene, I've sent you an email with this article in it. It's kind of
excellent article. Got that today. Excellent article.
Okay. Yeah, it took me a little bit of research to do that one. Okay, I'll just read a little bit about how this all, you know, the research I did. Most of us are hearing about the story about Henry Wirz and his unjust execution at the hands of Yankee fiends, the lies, trumped up charges, and use of charlatans as government witnesses against Wirz and his command of Andersonville are all familiar to those who have studied the war for Southern independence. These tactics were not unique in the mistreatment of Wirz, because I think, unfortunately, Captain Wirz of Zurich, Switzerland, was foreign-born and more vulnerable to public outrage by Yanks looking for revenge. And, of course, Gene, you've explained how the death of Lincoln tied in to this, also this act, this hope for revenge by the Yankees. My Confederate interest led me to an exchange of email with one of Captain Wirz's collateral descendants in Europe. Colonel Heinrich Wirz of Switzerland often has visited the United States to do honor to his ancestor and to fight for justice for Captain Wirz, even at this late date. Colonel Wirz has been actively seeking a revocation of the Wirz sentence through the efforts by the SCV's committee to exonerate Henry Wirz. For several years, we have discussed the mystery of the location of the grave of Mrs. Elizabeth Wirz, who was a native of Trigg County, Kentucky, which is in western Kentucky. It had been understood that she was buried somewhere in an unmarked grave in Trigg County. I had a good lead about 2 years ago. Now, this was written in 2006 when I was still researching, when Linda Fritz's mother told me at the Jefferson Davis birthday celebration in Fairview, Kentucky, that she was related to the Wolf family because Elizabeth Wirz's first husband, was a Wolf. And she had been to the cemetery where Elizabeth Wirz was supposed to be buried, but I was always unable to meet up with this lady in order to visit the cemetery, and she was not able to describe the location to me, so I had to find it on my own. While doing research on a Confederate veteran for Rebecca Owen of the Hopkinsville Library, which is located in Christian County adjacent to Trigg, I mentioned that I was anxious to find the grave of Mrs. Wirz. And lo and behold, she was kind enough to mail me a long article from the Trigg County Historical Articles, Volume 2, which actually stated in detail where Elizabeth Wirz was buried in Trigg County in an unmarked grave in Fuller Cemetery at the Boyd Hill Church in Linton, Kentucky. And from that, we went and we found a location which was probably a very good spot in the cemetery, and we had it marked in 2006.
Well, Sister Nancy, you did a great work. So did you, Bitter Ender. We have run completely out of time. I think this has been one hell of a three-hour broadcast. If our listeners, if our precious audience, our precious family didn't get an education out of this, then no one can be educated. It's fabulous. Y'all did fabulous work. I'm just so proud to be associated with everybody that came on this program tonight. So good night, Bitter Ender. Good night, Cal Bell. Glad you came on, Miss Nancy. Miss Monica. Thank you, Miss Lizzie. And thank you, Blood River Radio family that keeps us on the air. So folks, see y'all same time, same place next week, February the 10th, God willing. Good night, everyone.